experts play a crucial role in patent cases, but the standard for excluding experts in patent cases appears to be in flux. In Baker Hostetler's second annual IP Perspectives Thought Leadership piece, BHIPP, the Intellectual Property Practice Group highlights myriad IP-related topics that are at the forefront of industry developments and current challenges and trends. I'm Leanne Lee, and you're listening to Baker Hosts. On today's episode, we discuss the changing landscape and admissibility of experts in patent cases. To provide us with insight into this topic, we have Elena Lakowitz, an attorney in the Intellectual Property Group at Baker Hostetler and a member of the patents litigation team. Welcome to the show, Elena.
Thanks, Leanne, and thank you for having me.
So to start us off, why is it so important to keep track of developments regarding expert admissibility?
Sure. So experts really play a crucial part in patent cases. They opine on everything from claim construction, including means plus function claims, to infringement, invalidity, and damages. And the exclusion of an expert witness can significantly impact the outcome of a case. So it is really important to keep track of how the state of the law regarding expert admissibility is changing. Because if you don't, you could end up with an excluded expert.
Okay, so now let's talk about the governing rules. What rule governs the admissibility of expert testimony, and how has that recently changed?
Yeah, so that is Federal Rule of Evidence 702, which governs the admissibility of expert testimony. And it was recently amended in December 2023 to raise the standard. So basically, the amendment places the burden on the party offering the expert testimony to show that it is more likely than not that the opinions meet the requirements of Rule 702. The rule also now requires that the expert's opinion, quote, reflects a reliable application of the principles and methods to the facts of the case, end quote. So these changes would seemingly allow district court judges more power in deciding whether to exclude an expert.
Okay, now how has this changed the case law landscape on expert admissibility?
Well, we're just starting to see cases making their way to the Federal Circuit, which is the court that reviews patent cases. But they haven't exactly turned out the way we might have predicted. For some cases, it actually appears as though the Federal Circuit has lowered the bar on the standard for admissibility of expert opinions. One of the first cases, Parker Vision v. Qualcomm, the district court excluded Parker Vision's infringement experts, finding their opinions unreliable because they were not supported by testing and simulation of the accused products. In making this decision, the district court relied on scientific literature, which had stated that simulation was necessary to understand the accused product's behavior. And as a result, the district court granted summary judgment of non-infringement since Parker Vision's infringement experts were excluded. After Parker Vision appealed, the Federal Circuit actually reversed both the Daubert decision and the summary judgment decision. It found that there was, quote, neither a factual nor legal basis here for finding that expert testimony is unreliable unless the expert herself undertakes to test or simulate the accused product. The court emphasized that the jury should be the one to evaluate the correctness of facts, thereby potentially lowering the standard for the admissibility of expert opinions. In another case, Oseo Imaging v. Planmeca, the Federal Circuit addressed what qualifies an expert to testify on issues from the vantage point of an ordinary skilled artisan in a patent case. In that case, the jury was told that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have a bachelor's degree in electrical or computer engineering, plus 3 to 5 years working in a diagnostic imaging environment that uses the techniques described in the asserted patents. Planmeca moved for JMOL of non-infringement because Oseo's expert became a person of ordinary skill 8 to 10 years after the time of the invention and was therefore not skilled at the actual time of the invention. The district court denied the motion, and the Federal Circuit agreed. The Federal Circuit explained that it made little sense to add Plan Mecca's suggested timing requirement. It found an expert can acquire the necessary skill later and develop an understanding of what a person of ordinary skill knew at the time of the invention. So this is another ruling that makes things easier on the party offering the expert testimony. It allows those who have acquired the necessary skill level after the invention date to still qualify as experts. And then finally, in the EcoFactor versus Google case, the Federal Circuit upheld a district court's refusal to exclude the plaintiff's damages expert. In that case, the parties disputed whether the expert's opinion on a reasonable royalty was admissible. Specifically, the defendant claimed that the royalty rate opinion was improper because it was, quote, plucked out of nowhere, and also that it lacked economic comparability. The Federal Circuit rejected this argument, finding that the opinion was supported by three license agreements and the testimony of plaintiff's CEO. It also found that the expert had accounted for economic differences by adjusting the royalty rate upwards or downwards accordingly. Importantly, the Federal Circuit emphasized that, quote, if the standard for admissibility is raised too high, then the trial judge no longer acts as a gatekeeper, but assumes the role of the jury. This approach, again, appears to be lowering the bar for expert admissibility, which was actually recognized by a very strongly worded dissent by Judge Prost in this case. She cautioned that, quote, the majority's decision to overlook the prejudicial impact of this unreliable testimony abdicates its responsibility as a gatekeeper and contradicts our precedent. Since then, the Federal Circuit has vacated this decision and ordered rehearing en banc.
So when can we expect a decision in the EcoFactor case?
Sure. So Google filed its reply brief on February 18th, 2025. So we should hopefully see oral arguments scheduled soon with a decision to closely follow, hopefully before the end of the year.
Great. And I have one final question for you. What can attorneys and experts take away from these decisions?
So the Federal Circuit's recent decisions appear to have relaxed some of the admissibility standards, allowing for easier admissibility and more work for the jury rather than the court. That said, the Federal Circuit will soon review the EcoFactor case en banc, and that decision will likely impact the standards again. So bottom line, attorneys would be well advised to follow this case and make sure that they are aware of the most recent admissibility law developments in this area. Otherwise, exclusion is at risk.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you, Elena.
Thank you, Leon.
If you have any questions for Elena, her contact information is in the show notes. As always, thanks for listening to Baker Hosts. Comments heard on Baker Hosts are for informational purposes and should not be construed as legal advice regarding any specific facts or circumstances. Listeners should not act upon the information provided on Baker Hosts without first consulting with a lawyer directly. The opinions expressed on Baker Hosts are those of participants appearing on the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the firm. For more information about our practices and experience, please visit bakerlaw.com.